Everybody, welcome to Tuesday Sportsline, the Bulldog Hour. Cap Maury alongside. We'll take you to three, hand it off to our great friend Phil Benatti's fine show. Behind the Bench, usually 3 hours. Today, 90 minutes. It'll be time for Game 2 of the NLCS from Milwaukee as the Dodgers and the Brewers start what might be the back-to-back Dodger championship, given what happened last night. I bring this up because normally in the postseason, if you catch a terrible break, as the Dodgers did last night on that truly bizarre play off the center field fence, that kind of thing normally gets you beat, and at the end of a series, you lament about that. For the Dodgers to come back and win anyway last night tells me fate can't even kick them in the butt anymore. They're probably on their way to another title and another parade and all the Dodger blue stuff, and all you guys can email me about it. So if you think I'm trying to jinx you, you're absolutely correct. Unfortunately, it's probably going to happen in your favor anyway. We'll see how it plays out. Also, the fact that Blake Snell, who opted out of his Giants contract, was almost Don Larson last night, although he was a lot and is a lot better a pitcher than the old Goonie Bird was, but he did have his perfect game and almost had one last night had it not been for the very start of things. That having been said, 4:30 tonight, Dodgers and the Brewers game two, and of course the travel day in the ALCS as Toronto tries to survive in Seattle. By the way, if the Dodgers, and there's a long way to go, the Brewers are a fine team, if the Dodgers and the Mariners were to make the World Series, the Mariners become the last team in baseball to finally get there, currently playing, and would be the first time since the Giants and the Angels that we had a West Coast-only World Series. So we'll see what happens. We'll have full coverage for you. I'll tell you all about the schedule for both stations a little bit later on, courtesy of Ed Dunkel and his fine business, Precision Civil Engineering, planning, land surveying, civil engineering, landscape architecture, construction management. It's all there under one roof, 449-4500 or precisioneng.net. When we go over the schedule, I'll tell you more about the great fundraising Ed does for the Lyles College of Engineering at Fresno State. Jackson Moore with me, as always, our de facto co-host on a Tuesday. More of the postmortem from Friday past, I'd like to say Saturday or Sunday, but that would mean they had a chance to play the game again. Unfortunately, they did not, so I'll tell him about what's been going on the show, and he will tell you about his perspective from what happened as he was in person, as you guys know, in Fort Collins. We'll get to that and some of your emails in just a couple of minutes. But first, our other lead dogs want to spend some time with you, starting with Lee's Air Plumbing, Heating, and Roofing. Great local people, been in the Central Valley since 1981. More information, leesair.com or 825-5337, 825-LEES. They afford me the time every day to tell you about the weather. Again, if you have any need at all with your central or your plumbing, maybe right now some flooding, but your heating is always at the forefront, or your roofing, which could be an issue right now, give them a call or go to the web, and you'll see the avocado green and blue truck pull up in a big, big hurry. As far as the forecast goes, well, rainy would be the forecast. We're supposed to hit a 61 today. Things are supposed to clear out. Still scattered showers throughout the valley after a lot of heavy rains in certain areas. Things should be done right around 9 o'clock or so tonight on the valley floor, and then lingering in the foothills to early tomorrow morning. By tomorrow afternoon, we should be back to normal, and after a 61 today, a 67 tomorrow, and then a very pleasant end of the 7-day 70 on Thursday. The sun will be back out. 72 Friday, 76 Saturday, 79 on Sunday, and 70 on Monday. Again, in the burn-scarred areas, look out for the flooding. And still in the foothills, you have rain issues and the eastern part of the valley as well. And up at China Peak, I know they had somewhere between 4 and 9 inches of snow. So if you are a big-time skier, you're going to really enjoy that. Our first substantial storm, and we'll see how it finally plays out. And I hope everybody have their power still on. I know there was an accident that took it out in certain parts of town already, but be careful out there. The roads obviously are still very wet. Anyway, thanks to everybody at Lee's for allowing us the time. Again, leesair.com, 825-5337, 825-Lee's. The other reminders, one comes courtesy of the local operators of KFC in Fresno, Clovis, Selma, and Kerman. It's great to have them aboard. They benefit the Valley in so many ways, and we're very pleased that they're part of everything we do at the station. And right now, they have not only their great Tuesday deal underway, they've had for a good long while, which is the $10 eight-piece bucket or tenders offer, in addition to the Wednesday country fried steak offer. But they have their honey barbecue specials back again. This is a throwback to the 90s, and it was so popular then, and it's back once more. And there are a bunch of different offers right now. You have the original honey barbecue two-piece chicken combo there that has their terrific chicken dunked in honey barbecue sauce, the individual sides, the biscuits, the medium drink, and even a wet nap. They have that for $10.99. They've also got a three-piece offering of the same thing. There's a three-piece tenders combo and a four-piece tenders combo you can check out, and also the original honey barbecue chicken sandwich combo. All of those very reasonably priced, and so check that out at the local KFCs in Fresno, Clovis, Selma, and Kerman. And if you stop in, tell them thanks for being part of the solution across the valley athletically, because it really does help a great deal. Finally, we want to thank our pal Joe Cruz as well at Superior Pipe and Stainless Supply, who allows me the time every day to tell you how to donate to Fresno State. Joe's terrific business, celebrating his 25th anniversary at 4529 North Marty Avenue in Town Suite 103. You can always give him a call at 266-7473, which is 266-PIPE. Or go to the web at superiorpipeusa.com, or Gabe, who works for Joe, has a direct email, gabe.sbs@gmail.com. Pipe fittings, valves, sanitary fittings, food-grade chemical hoses, suction hoses, it's all there under one roof. If you're working in any industrial sense, at a plant, a maintenance person, tanker, delivery service, anything that relies upon a valve, might be at a dairy, for instance, if it goes down, that valve can take your business down in a big hurry. And not only does Joe have superior product, but he has same-day estimates, same-day service, keeping you up and running in case you have a glitch or two, or if it's been catastrophic already, he'd get you back up in a big hurry. Stop in and see him or give him a call. And if you have a chance, after he tells you what he can do for your business, he would like to have a few minutes to tell you how to donate to Fresno State, something he has done now for over three decades and has been able to give directly to the university, particularly in the last 25 years with this terrific business. He would tell you right now the best avenue, go to the main website at GoBulldogs.com. There's a donate link there. Click on that. Take you to different areas of donation. BulldogFoundation.org is there. By the way, the BDF celebrating its 75th anniversary right now. You also have the Green Bee Society and the Myers Champion Circle. They're under Major Giving Society. Some more information there. And also methods of support. You've got the sports clubs. You've got the Valley Co-op. All of that couched under methods of support, telling you how you can go about giving to Fresno State. And with those sports clubs, by the way, you can get your money directly to the sport you choose. For instance, quarterback club for football, timeout club for men's basketball. They just had the banquet last night. Jack Ferdy with me tomorrow to talk basketball. He'll be with me every Wednesday now to talk b-ball after we had a number of preempts because of the Giants season. But Jack will be back with me. I'll ask him how things went in the banquet, and he will tell you that he would like to have more members at the timeout club, and he will tell you you can give him a call directly at 559-287-3305, which is his cell, or hit him up on his email, ferdyjack@aol.com. There are links there to other sports as well, including the Dugout Club for baseball and other men's and women's sports, again, under ways to give. So I want to thank Joe Cruz, Superior Pipe and Stainless Supply, for allowing us the time to tell you how to donate to Fresno State. Thanks to Ed Dunkel, Precision Civil Engineering. Tell you more about the schedule later on. Thanks to Lee's Air Plumbing, Heating, and Roofing. They also bring you the Lee's Air Hotline. That's how we'll bring Jackson up and how Phil can bring guests up and callers from the general public. 559-320-1430. Mark that down. That is the Lee's Air Hotline. And, of course, thanks to the local operators at KFC in Fresno, Clovis, Selma, and Kerman. That having been said, let's bring up our de facto co-host all the way back from Fort Collins. He flew back in, and boy, are his arms tired. That's right, the oldest joke in the book. It is Sir Jackson Moore. Jackson, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Tony. How are you?
It's been a nifty week already, Jackson. That's for sure. There's nothing like a Bulldog loss to uplift the spirits around the Central Valley. Okay, so this seems like this is about the 10th show of the week. This is Tuesday, isn't it? Okay, it was a very long Monday, and I want to get to where we were at. And by the way, Robert, I know you asked about what the goals are of this year. I'll try to get to that during the week. I don't know if we'll get to it today. But I do appreciate all the emails, and JJ and everybody, thanks for chiming in. And there were a number of them I didn't get to yesterday that we'll try to move through a little bit later in the week. Jackson, let's start with this, a conversation that you and I had before the season even started. We knew, everybody knew, and that's what I was bringing up yesterday, the assistant coach that I talked to, when I brought up the fact that he said, stuff to run and Fresno State can be beaten. That wasn't a revelation. What I was saying was everybody already knows that. What I wanted to get from that assistant coach, who shall go nameless, I was having the conversation with him, by the way, because he was looking for the backhaul feed of the Nevada-San Diego State game from Saturday night past. The reason he wanted the backhaul feed, he's in charge of putting the video together for that particular school that Fresno State has already played. And in the backhaul feeds that you get, in this case from CBS Sports Network, after the game ends with what you see over air, there is a melt, which is the field-level shots you don't see during the game that are sent back to the studio. In this case, CBS, ESPN does it as well. And those field-level shots can really help someone who does scouting, because you get to see certain things and certain isolations that you don't normally see during the game. That's what he was looking for. That's why we had the conversation. And when I was talking to him and I asked him about Fresno State, I knew he was going to say, yeah, just load the box and you can stop them. What I wanted to know was, when he was critical of the passing game, exactly what was it in the passing game that was the issue? Is it the quarterback? Is it the offensive line? Is it the wide receivers? Is it the play calling? Is it all of the above or some of the above? And he just was very diplomatic, which is a nice way of saying he wouldn't take the bait to answer my question. Okay, so that's what I was doing. I wasn't trying to tell anybody, hey, guess what? If you load the box, you can beat Fresno State. We all knew that going in. To that point, Jackson, before the season started, we were talking about the great running teams, and I had mentioned, for instance, the USC team that went to Alabama at the start of the 70s when Bear Bryant wanted to integrate things at the University of Alabama, which at that time was not an easy task. And so he decided to ask his good friend John McKay to bring that great USC team in. They actually played the game in Birmingham, and he knew, Bear Bryant did, that he was probably going to get clubbed big time by USC, and that's what happened. USC ran all over him, just destroyed him. There's a retrospective that was put together at the 50-year mark of this on Showtime. You can still find it there. I think Paramount Plus also has it because they're tied into Showtime. And really what it was about was a USC team that was so dominant on the ground. Student body left, student body right. This happened throughout the 60s and 70s. They would actually tell you, Jackson, where they were going. They would tell the defense, hey, we're going left. And you could put 11 guys left, and USC was still going to steamroller you. That's the kind of great running team that you can't stop. The Green Bay Packers in the 60s, we've all seen it, right? I grew up with it. Vince Lombardi there with the coach's shorts, the black high tops, the white socks, the white T-shirt, and the whistle around his neck, and the chalkboard out there on the practice field saying, you put a seal here and a seal there, and you run it through the alley. And the Packers sweep was pull Thurston and pull Kramer and run Taylor and Horning behind it, and you cannot stop it. Jackson, when we were talking at the start of the year, we were mentioning Fresno State was not going to be that kind of team. There are very few teams like that. So when you want to run it and you want to shorten the game, you're going to have to zig when somebody else zags, meaning they're going to come there to stop it. And the only way that you can offset that is have your passing game be efficient. It has not been efficient. That's why everybody knows that as much as the Bulldogs want to run it, they just can't run it when the other team is saying, we have no respect for your ability to beat us through the air. That having been said, Jackson, we knew it at the start. I said to you they'd have to take what the defense gives them, and you said, funny you bring that up. You had just talked to Davis, and he had said that's exactly what they're going to have to do. Jackson, in your opinion, have they failed in being able to take what the defense gives them, and is there a specific reason that that has happened? Because it's all about through the air. What do you say about it?
Yeah, it's, to that point, if teams are loading the box, you probably won't be all that efficient on first and 10. Are you going to get to second and 7 or second and 6? Can you run for another 3 or 4 yards? And teams are just stacking the box. That's, we don't see an overly dominant O-line from this Bulldog team that can routinely do that. But when it's 3rd and 1, it doesn't matter how many guys are on the D-line. You got to be able to convert. And I think back to the Bulldogs being down 14-0, Brandon Ramirez gets the ball, and Colorado State's best linebacker just lays the hit on him for a 2-yard loss. So, maybe if the Bulldogs convert that, it's a different game. And then you have the failed 4th down, take punt right after. And those two plays combined, hand the ball over to Colorado State in good field position, and everything just keeps snowballing further and further. So, there is still a part of that running game. They got to kind of get over the hump there. But in general, I think prior to this game, they have been efficient enough. You look at the short passing game by E.J. Warner's numbers, it's been like over 90% completion rates. Even this Colorado State game in the short game was still fairly efficient. The problem was that when you're playing from so far behind, you can't quite stick to the run like you would like to, and you can't just throw all those dinks and dunks like you would like to. You got to be a little more aggressive, and the Bulldogs were really bad in the deep passing game against Colorado State, and that's where 2 of Warner's interceptions came from, and a lot of games they don't throw deep at all, maybe once or twice. So I think in this particular game they got thrown off course. I think they could have avoided it, even with some of the mishaps by the defense early on. And I think before this past game, it's been clear that the passing game hasn't been overly dangerous, but they had been efficient enough in taking what the defense was giving them to get enough points on the board and move the ball enough. You just kind of felt like it was going to eventually bite them in the rear eventually when they faced a team that could put more pressure on the Bulldogs, and that's exactly what happened on Friday. I think it's a combination of things. Again, I think Warner's doing a lot of what the team asks them to do when they can run the offense formally, but it's not a big threat downfield, obviously. I think the running game hasn't been as strong the last couple of games. Maybe Roland Fullwood missing Colorado State was a bigger deal than people realize. And I think in the receivers unit, it's just been kind of a lack of another weapon emerging. Josiah Freeman and Ezekiel Abbott have been very good, but although those two guys have only been on the field together for a couple of games, and there hasn't really been a number 3 that stepped up to be very dangerous, and in this case, a number 2 against the Rams. So, they threw to Freeman 15 times in this game, and it became pretty obvious where they wanted to get the ball through the air and a lot of other trusted options. So there's kind of I would say, not overly overwhelmingly issues with a lot of different areas on the offense, but there's, you can kind of pick 3 or 4 different position groups on the offense that are having a little bit of trouble, and you add those together and it can become a big issue.
Well, one of the things we talked about at the start of the year, and it has played out up until last Friday anyway, was shortening the game and then relying on your defense to make the plays late to win. And again, Fresno State had one truly dominant performance going into last Friday, and that was the one against Southern, an FCS team, even against Georgia Southern, the Bulldogs were behind at half. They did play a very dominant second half. But every other game, you had the loss to Kansas, every other game from Oregon State to Nevada to Hawaii, et cetera, the one play here or there, and the Bulldogs could have lost the game. Somebody, particularly defensively, always stepped up to make the play. So when we talk about what happened Friday night, it was a tremendous failure on the offensive side. I mentioned to Paul, what was really frustrating, Jackson, is they didn't lose the game once. They lost it twice. They lost it at 28-3, and yet with 3 minutes to go in the third quarter, they're one play away from a one-score game. They didn't get it. They did not get the fourth down. They did not get the fake working. But they had pulled themselves back in the game with plenty of time to go. But after that, again, the wins failed to carry the sail. And the fourth quarter, of course, was, again, the Bulldogs just trying to chase it futilely from behind. The defense has to share blame for what happened Friday night. But that, I hope, is a one and off. You were there. One of the things you brought up to me was they were flat. Any notion why this team was flat with so much at stake on Friday night?
Well, before the game, the energy looked like it was there. And it was kind of similar to being at Oregon State earlier in the season where the crowd was pretty sparse and the home team was not performing very well and they didn't have much energy on that side. And then Fresno State came in with energy. I felt like Coach Ince was probably even more animated than I've seen him in some other games. And, I mean, the team went in fact, when I went down from the press box to the field, I heard this loud music, and I'm assuming it's coming from the stadium, the field, so I'm just following the music trying to find the entrance to the field, and that music was coming from the Bulldogs locker room. I mean, there was a lot of energy before the game, and I feel like, you know, they got hit with a couple haymakers, and it got hit, thrown off balance, and it got shaken a little bit. You know, even at times when the team was down by three or four scores in the first half, there was still a pretty good energy on the sideline after they initially got over the mishaps, and you know, the sideline was still jumping and chanting for the defense and that kind of stuff. But it was really just it wasn't the lack of emotion or noise or the facial expressions, it was just the execution. The defense came out and gave up a 73-yard touchdown run, almost 30 yards longer than any play they gave up in six whole games before that. And it was just really uncharacteristic. The defense looked a bit confused. I don't know how different the Rams came out than what they were expecting them to, but you know, they were out of place. The second drive, they gave up a 20-plus yard touchdown where the receiver's just wide open behind the Bulldog defense. We haven't seen that happen all year long. So it looked like whether it was effort or schematic issues, the defense was just in a very uncharacteristic position the first couple of drives. You know, the offense struggled early, and it's not anything we haven't seen before, and the Bulldogs have still won games even when that's happened, but especially the defense was, I think them especially, since they've been so solid. You talk about the Bulldogs not necessarily dominating teams throughout the year, but the last couple of games, Nevada, hopefully, the defense has been excellent for 80-90% of the game and has given the offense every opportunity to win games. And I think when the defense got taken advantage of early, it might have shaken the confidence in a way that we haven't seen in quite a few weeks. So, and then also, again, as I mentioned, the Bulldogs had all that energy before the game. It looked like there was going to be no crowd. It was raining. And by the time the Rams were at 14-0, that crowd filled up pretty quick. It got pretty loud in there, despite there being a lot of empty seats. So it felt like things just turned on its head really fast, and it took too long for them to recover. I do give Coach Ince credit for calling the fake punt. You know, if that play works, maybe it's a whole different game. They were trying to do things to kickstart the team, but it just didn't get going until it was way too late.
Well, your point about the energy there, you know, the Bulldogs, for the first time probably since the second half of the Kansas game, looked as though they were defeated emotionally by that fourth quarter after they had made the run to get back in the game. And the difference, of course, and you were there in Lawrence, so you knew it, there, that crowd, because it was stadium renovation, whatever, that crowd was lit from the start, literally and figuratively lit, I think, in Kansas. All right, they had plenty of time for tailgating. The crowd at Colorado State, it was not only late arriving, but it was a little bit of, you're going to have to prove it to us, right? A lot of empty seats, and even those that were there were probably in the mindset of, here we go again. Though, if you looked closely, Colorado State, they had been in games, they just weren't able to finish it. But the minute that that crowd had a reason to get excited, that's what college kids can do to you, right? Between 18 and 22, they suddenly made a difference in that game. And by the fourth quarter, the Bulldogs looked a little bit shell-shocked again. They could have and should have been able to win the game. They did not. The defense, I think, just had a very bad night, and I don't expect to see a repeat of that. I think the guys that have made plays will continue to do so against San Diego State and against Boise State. The question, Jackson, comes down to whether, from the play calling to the offensive line, to the wide receivers, to the quarterbacking, I'm not putting it on the running backs because they just haven't had holes to run through. We know what Luke can do. We know what Donaldson can do. We know what Ramirez can do. They've got to have room to be able to operate. You can't have backers in your backfield with you. You mentioned that the shot that Ramirez took, you know, it looked a little bit like the shot Okoye took the one time with the Kansas City Chiefs, where all of a sudden the guy that was just a steamroller is suddenly on his back because of a big-time hit that really energized the team, right? I'm saying in this case the Denver Broncos, by the way, with the hit. But the Bulldogs have to fix their ability to move the football, whether it's with the tight end or if they're going to take the top off. They're going to have to fix it, Jackson, because, and this was the point that was trying to be made yesterday, everybody and his brother knew going into the season what the Bulldogs wanted to do, and now it's manifested itself in a way that the defense on the other side is saying, we are just not worried about you beating us through the air. So if you're structurally trying to change things, are you going to look to what has been maybe the most effective thing lately in your passing game, which is the tight end? Or are you going to say that Warner is going to be able to not make that critical mistake? And I bring this up because, as we've talked over and over again, you can be a running back. For instance, Barry Sanders, one of the greatest running backs in college at Oklahoma State, or obviously with the Lions. Barry Sanders was a game-breaker, edge-of-your-seat Hall of Famer, but he also led the league in most rushes lost, meaning yardage-wise. Hi, buddy. Welcome back. We had a brief power surge that took both myself and Jackson off the main board, so we've gotten Jackson back, and we'll get back to the conversation. Jackson, you hear me okay?
Yes, I'm here, Tony.
Okay, it is a rainy day, as you know, and so the power will do this. And we had just talked about it at the start of the show that certain people had already power issues today. Anyway, I'm not sure where we were at, Jackson, but the point I was making very quickly was a great running back can have plays where he loses yardage, but if he breaks one for 60 or 70 late, all is forgiven. Quarterback can make five or six really good throws, then make the poor one, and it completely erases all the positive things you were doing on a drive. That having been said, for the Bulldogs, Warner came in with the issues at both Temple and Rice about being a guy who could throw it, but also at times got a little impatient, maybe at times forced things because he didn't have support around him. Whatever the case, he would make the critical mistake. Going forward here, that can't happen anymore. He can't have the throws when, after the Bulldogs are moving the ball, suddenly a safety is roaming around and a pass is overshot by 5 or 6 yards and it's an INT or an out pattern that somebody jumped or whatever it is. Question I had for you was this. If he is the guy the rest of the way, is he a guy who can avoid that big mistake the rest of the way and be the one to bring Fresno State back, because you and I both know the margin for error now is zero. You cannot lose again. If you're in divisional play, remember 2014, a 5-3 record got it done. But in this kind of setup, you cannot afford those kind of losses, because you've got everybody lined up together. You're going to take the top two, so you have to focus on the entirety of the league. You've got Boise State, San Diego State, and UNLV hanging around there. You just can't lose again, particularly when you don't play the Rebels. What about it? Is Warner capable of avoiding that big mistake the rest of the way?
I think it's circumstantial. You look at the last several games. I know the fans have been a bit disgruntled, quite a bit of the fan base, with Warner's performance and concern long term that it could cost the Bulldogs. I think the coaching staff has been, you know, satisfactory with the completion percentage and the efficiency in the short game and just kind of managing the game and being able to get wins. But you look at the way that the Colorado State game played out, he threw more interceptions than he had in the last 4.5 games combined. He was sacked as many times as he was in the last 5 games combined. He threw 20 more passes than any game for the Bulldogs prior to that one throughout the season. So I think the moral of the story of this game, by even asking Coach Entz about Warner's performance, was his answer was he wished that Warner wouldn't have had to have been in that position to throw the ball so much. And so I think if you're Fresno State, you've got two options. You either have to be extra committed to being able to keep yourselves in the game flow that you want to be in, or you have to make some changes in order to be prepared to play from behind, because it was clear the Bulldogs weren't able to play from behind. I don't think there's any confidence in this offense to be able to be in a similar situation the rest of the way and be able to dig their way out of it. But there is a lot of confidence of the team together playing complementary football and eking out wins the way that they had for most of the year. So they've either got to shore things up with the running game and the defense and really commit to what they've been, or they do need to shake some things up and be a little more prepared to be able to be more explosive on offense and to be able to play from behind a little bit if they need to. They probably will at some point over the next few weeks. So it's interesting this bye week. It sounds like there are some things that are being tinkered with a little bit, and we'll see if this team looks significantly different for San Diego State or if they try to stay the course.
We've talked about Conklin before, and we saw him, of course, when he was at Sac State. And look, it's not a newsflash. He is a very talented guy. He is also more of a gunslinger. He's the kind of quarterback that a lot of coaches are afraid of, frankly, as far as putting him in there, because he will make the big play, but he also can, on occasion, force the football. Jackson, if you're going to see turnovers anyway, would you be more prone to say, you know what, if we can't avoid the turnover, then let's bring the guy in there that can erase some of those turnovers with big-time touchdown throws? Or are you going to say, we're a running team, we started this way, we're not going to change course in the middle of the year? I mean, I'm not asking you to put yourself in Matt Entz's place. I'm saying, is that a tough argument right now for any coach in his own mind to resolve at this particular point in the season?
Yeah, the way I would approach it, talking with Coach Davis, off the coordinator the last couple of weeks, he's basically said pretty bluntly that Kansas did some things that really disrupted what they had planned to do, and that game gave the blueprint to other teams on how to approach them. Nevada, Hawaii, and I assume Colorado State, I haven't talked to Coach Davis yet about that game, but basically a lot of them just copycatted what Kansas did.
Right.
I wonder if they could have not played that week zero at all, if some of these teams would have the answers that they have right now. But basically they're getting the same looks week after week, and the Bulldogs have been trying to execute their offense, and they're kind of getting hit by a wall here with some of the approaches teams are taking. So if they don't have the O-line and the running game to overpower, you know, maybe if this Colorado State game would have stayed competitive and the Bulldogs could have committed to the run, those numbers would have looked a bit different and the game plan would have looked different. But in general, they're getting schemes that they're not able to overcome with their base running game, and they don't have a threatening enough passing game. So I think structurally, you know, they need to figure out some ways to get defenses out of that. And I figured between Colorado State's seemingly lack of run defense and all the injuries across the board that they would have found a way to do that, but they certainly didn't. And so I do think they need to go up to the drawing board a little bit and figure things out. I know Coach Davis also said that the defenses they're seeing in the Mountain West are a lot different from what the schemes that were that he saw on a regular basis at the FCS level. And the South Dakotas, the style of football is quite a bit different out there. So I think collectively they need to come up with some ideas to shake things up a bit and force defenses to do some other things.
Well, I know the assistant coach I talked to, tremendous respect for the running backs that Fresno State has. Again, it's very tough to put anything at the doorstep of Luke, of Donaldson, or Ramirez when, again, you've got guys in the backfield with you, for goodness sake. I mean, you've got to give your guys room to operate. A lot of that's on the O-line, but also a lot of it is on the play calling and trying to find a way to zig when they zag. I mean, you just, if you're going to be an offense that Davis mentioned to you, that they're going to have to take what is given to them, then if you want to run and they're going to stop you and you're not physically able to overwhelm them, then make them pay. So it starts with your quarterback. You got to find a way to get your receivers open. Again, the tight ends have been open some. Jackson, because of that mixture right now that they have to have, do you think what we have seen by and large at the core, talking about personnel-wise, will stay the same for San Diego State? I mean, is there any other choice but to do that? I mean, can you make – do you have the depth beyond your quarterbacking situation to change anything else out there? Or is it, you know, these are the guys you've got, and maybe they've regressed to the mean now, and maybe those plays that kept you from being 2-4, right, the plays that could have gone the other way, maybe those plays are catching up to you? Or do you say there are things structurally and personnel-wise you can do in this bye week to change things so it doesn't happen again the way it did Friday night?
I think there's options. I think there's the doors open for some things to change on offense. There's some offensive line personnel they can look at. Obviously, the quarterback situation, they've been very committed to E.J. Warner, but they could open that door a little bit here in the bye week and see what Carson Conklin can do, or at least maybe have him ready if the Bulldogs are in a similar situation as they were last week, to perhaps go that route and give that a shot. I think in the receiver room is definitely an interesting one because, as mentioned earlier, it's just been a lot of guys that they've tried and haven't quite found a number three that they're comfortable with. And so I think it would be nice if they could settle on something there. You know, we've seen Harold Duvall not get a lot of snaps, but make a lot of big plays within those snaps. So maybe he gets a shot. I know Jayon Farrar has graded out well. He's kind of, some games he's had a big role, some games we haven't seen much of him. Jaleel McClain had a couple highlights this past game. So especially if Ezekiel Abbott is not coming back soon, don't know exactly what his status is. They really need to find someone else to throw to besides Josiah Freeman. I think the tight end room is in a very good place. If they could get Brock Liam healthy, that would bring a whole different dimension to this team. I don't know how soon that might happen. And then in the running back room, it's just been, you know, I don't think we've seen Bryson Donaldson quite put up the numbers that we thought he was capable of. And we saw Brandon Ramirez get a greater role this past game. So it certainly seems like they're up to tinkering things there. So I think everything's got to be on the table, because what the Bulldogs have done up to this point, I think, was sufficient to defeat teams that had some issues, and these next couple of teams, San Diego State and Boise State, don't have very many weaknesses. You can't just have a good day on defense, or even maybe just a good defense and running game. I think you've got to be really put together a complete performance that the Bulldogs just haven't done yet, and that's a little intriguing because the Bulldogs are 5-2 without really having a complete game. But we also, through seven games, really haven't seen it. They're going to need to do that against both of San Diego State and Boise State to knock off either of those two teams, I think.
Well, again, they went into that game Friday night at 5-1. They easily could have gone in at 2-4, and so very hopeful that the plays that they made prior to Friday night defensively they're going to make again. I'm guessing, in your opinion, this bye week comes at a really good time. And again, they have the back-to-back, San Diego State and Boise State, then another bye week. But this one right now, Jackson, is it a very fortuitous time to have this bye week for this team?
I think so, personally. It's because maybe if they would have squeaked out a win at Colorado State and they just kept doing the same thing, probably would have not voted as well for San Diego State and Boise State compared to now, where I think they do need to consider a lot of changes between what they're doing on offense and try to come up with something to attack these two teams. I know talking to Coach Hintz after the Colorado State game, he wasn't happy about the bye week. He didn't want to have to fester in this loss for 2 weeks, which now they're doing right now. I do think they needed this extra time to gear up for two big opponents. 5-2 is great. 6-1 would have been even better, but that recipe didn't look like it was going to be successful too. That's good as San Diego State's playing and what Boise State's capable of doing.
Well, on Thursday, we'll talk a little bit more about the Aztecs. By the way, Richard, you had said, does UNLV drive me crazy? Yeah, UNLV, their attitude is quite something. You would think they've had 50 years of great success football-wise. It's something we'll get to later on, but the Bulldogs are not going to get a shot at the Rebels, and that is both a good and bad thing. A good thing if you're playing poorly, a bad thing if that turns out to be a game now you can't get back because you don't have an opportunity to beat them. You do have a chance to beat San Diego State and Boise State, and of course we'll talk more about the Aztecs on Thursday. And if you want to look at a comparative score, you don't really want to look at what happened against Nevada for both teams. Is that fair to say, Jackson?
Yeah, it's the Aztecs are on a roll right now, and we'll see if the Bulldogs can slow them down.
Yeah, you had a close win at home, and you saw Nevada get the Thunder, 44-3 or whatever it was the other night. All right, the last thing for you, and thanks for hanging again today, and we'll get back to it with Jackson on Thursday. Without passing judgment, do you anticipate a change at QB, or knowing what you know about Matt Entz, do you believe that the decision that was made about Warner will continue to be Warner's job right now as the number one guy? What is your feeling about that?
Yeah, I don't anticipate a change. I think the door is open to a degree that it probably wasn't before that Colorado State game, and especially with the bye. You can give Carson Conklin more reps. I know the last bye, they intentionally gave him more reps as a kind of a developmental approach. Now, this might be an opportunity to get him more reps to kind of see where he's at. I think it's also important to note, Warner was here for the spring. Conklin wasn't. He's been here now for 2.5 months as far as being on the team and practicing, so he may be quite a bit improved compared to where he was in fall camp when the decision was made. So I think they've got to at least assess that. I don't think they're benching Warner. I think there's probably some fans that would want to go that route, but I do think they're going to take a look at Conklin and get him ready to go if they feel that there's an opportunity to make a spark at some point.
Well, we'll see what happens. It's going to be a very interesting bye week and then the lead up to San Diego State. And we're still waiting, right, Jackson, for 12:30 or 4 o'clock. Still haven't made that final decision yet, right?
Yeah, that announcement will come on Sunday or potentially late Saturday night. Should be Sunday. And so about 6 days to gear up and make tailgate plans for the homecoming game.
Well, we've said over and over again, and we know that network TV controls all of it for Fresno State, almost without exception, maybe a couple of games in the non-conference year. But the bottom line is 7 o'clock in September and 4 o'clock October and November has always been best. If they have an opportunity, I hope it's 4 o'clock. 12:30 is a little early. A lot of other things going on for people. 4 o'clock is a perfect time. Tailgate opportunity and people that have to come from out of the farther reaches of the valley, it's a lot easier for them as well. And we'll see how it plays out. Last thing for you, 20, 30% on the board, where are we at here?
Yeah, it's currently 30% off a year to join for the full year, and you can get in on the monthly full price and get in on the Paramount Plus deal as well. So hope people will take advantage and get in for the rest of the season here. For recruiting cycle is coming down to the final stretch, and we'll be turning the corner to basketball season here too, as well. So a lot to get in on at barkboard.com.
Well, nobody works harder than you do. I mean that sincerely. You are an amazing, amazing guy, and I hope people do take you up on that. It's well worth the sub. Doesn't cost much money at all. Jackson, appreciate it. Talk to you on Thursday. Take care.
You too, Tony. Thank you.
All right, Defect co-host Jackson Moore. All right, guys, we are going to skate out of here. I want to thank our sponsors again. Change a little bit today because we had the power issue at the bottom of the hour. But thanks to Lee's Air Plumbing, Heating, and Roofing. Of course, the Lee's Air Hotline, 320-1430. Mark that down. Thanks, as always, to Ed Dunkel, Precision Civil Engineering. Thanks to Joe Cruz, Superior Pipe Stainless Supply. And thanks to the local operators at KFC in Fresno, Clovis, Selman, Kerman. They have the great barbecue sauce deals right now. The barbecue chicken, the classics from the 90s, all on sale at your local KFCs. Thanks to Jorge. Phil is coming up, and then the Dodgers and the Brewers with Game 2. That'll be at 4:30, and over on 790, the Sharks are up tonight. And one other reminder, on Thursday, Phil, as always, at Fashion Furniture with our great friend Rod Evadiki in El Paso across from River Park. Great conversation of Phil's show. The terrific furniture, the best you're going to find anywhere. Nothing like it in all of California. Some good eats as well. Stop by and see him. By the way, Rod has his 65th anniversary celebration, a big blowout Friday at Fashion Furniture. Stop by and see that as well. We will see you guys with Jack Furtick tomorrow. Phil is coming up. This is KFIG Fresno.